air, and it's 6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, androgynous helpers of animals, and of course, all you guilt-ridden people, and those who don't know the difference between being boundaryless and being politically correct. Good morning to you, people. This is Morning Sedition. That is Mark Riley. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you, sir.
I got a little frog in my throat, as you can hear.
Yeah.
Damn it, a little upper respiratory nastiness going on. Got the tea and lemon going again. You know, I didn't get sick for months.
And now?
And now, well, I don't know. I'm hoping it's not going to be major. You know what I mean?
I don't think it'll be. It may just be a couple 24 hours or something. You don't want to get out to California and be sick. You know you don't want to do that.
Yeah, well, maybe. Maybe there's some part of my brain that's sort of like, hey, I'm going to go home and my wife can take care of me.
Yeah.
I want some soupy.
Two words for you. Ginger root.
I did that, all right? Enough of the voodoo.
That's not voodoo.
Come on.
Ginger root does not play. Ginger root will push whatever it is out.
Come on. You know what, dude? I've been doing ginger root. I made ginger root tea. I got the lemon going. I got the honey going. I got echinacea and zinc going. The truth of the matter is, sometimes you're just going to get it.
Well, you know get it, but it depends on how long you want to stay with it.
No. I know. I've been taking care of myself. And, you know, granted, since I've stopped smoking cigarettes and since, you know, I do, you know, take care of myself a lot better. It doesn't last as long. But this seems to be going around. I mean,
yeah,
it took one guy out for, man, for like he was out for like
he
a week
out
and
for
a half.
A good while.
But I don't
yeah.
think that's what I have, you know. And then we don't have to go on about it. But I believe in the zinc echinacea lozenges. I get it. The quantum zinc is what I've been using.
Quantum.
I believe in quantum zinc that I get at the vitamin shop.
Ah.
Yeah, there's not very many, there's only these chain health food stores here in New York. There's only a couple of, you know, old school health food
stores. What is it, like GNC? Is GNC a health food? Or is that like...
It's a vitamin store. This one's sort of like that.
Is that like... Do they sell steroids at GNC?
No, they might sell creatine.
I don't know.
Creatine. Well, yes, you do, Mark. Steroids are illegal.
No, they're not.
Yes, they are.
No, they're not.
I'm sorry,
you can get a steroid. You can get steroids through a prescription. I have.
The prescription, again, a prescription.
A prescription.
Right, so would they have them at GNC?
Besides, not all, remember that not all of these things are illegal. Remember that the steroids that Barry Bonds is alleged to have taken were not illegal at the time he took them.
Yeah, for horses.
No, for people.
All right. Yeah, but also you do need a syringe, which usually you can't get at GNC.
No, you can rub it. Because the stuff that Bonds used was a cream he rubbed on his kneecaps. You don't need any, you don't shoot it.
You mean I can just rub some cream on my kneecaps and be Superman?
And yes, you can hit 73 home runs, maybe
really?
74.
People underestimate the power of cream.
Yeah, no, this is not true. Giambi was the one that shot up. Marion Jones allegedly shot up. She denies it.
Yeah.
But no, Bonds never shot anything. It was all rubbed in.
Cream works.
Yeah.
You know, it depends what you put in the cream. It's just another way to get things in. But people don't realize how permeable the skin is. It is an organ, you know, the skin.
I know.
And things go in and out, and you can do all... What's that, John? You want to say something? Say it so I can hear. Yeah, oh, John Larson just piped in with the largest organ, of course. And with him, it's a little larger. Sorry.
I knew we were going to get into this.
The only reason I said that, Jonathan, don't get mad at me, Clutch, man. The only reason we're talking about your wedding pictures and how big your head used to be and how you're half the man you used to be in a good way. Half the man you used to be. 28.7 pounds, folks. 0.7, okay? 0.7, 28.7 pounds off of John Larson. Where'd it go?
Is that how
I don't know.
28.7?
Is that unbelievable?
Yo, that's deep.
And the thing about Larson is like you don't really realize it because the fat distributed itself very well on Larson. You know? And now, like, he's like stealth, man.
Well, you know what? He went. I know he and his wife went to the Christmas party last night.
I didn't.
And I think they had, like, maybe a little bit of salad. And so, was there some dry white toast involved? I don't know. What did you have?
Yeah. Okay. Wait. I think you were gonna get him.
Clogging stuff up in there.
We're gonna try chicken with buttermilk on it and some mashed potatoes and some sweet potato concoction, but it was all small portions.
Small portions because he's on the core plan.
Was that what that was? Buttermilk on top of the chicken?
Yes.
I just thought it was some goo.
People don't realize how exciting this is. This is the first time John Larson, Clutch Larson, is speaking from the booth. Usually from the booth, he just speaks into our heads through ear sets, and if he wants to talk on the air, he has to come in here because the studio was built in 1907. So now he's able to talk from the... Oh, wait.
Yeah,
oh, that's right. And you were here.
Yes, that's right. I was here. I know.
Oh, man. You know what I did yesterday? All right. All right.
What?
I needed a vacuum, man.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned that. What did you get?
Yeah.
A Dirt Devil, didn't you?
No, you're not going to believe what I did. You can't
Dyson.
Believe
you got a, you got a $500 Dyson vacuum cleaner.
I bought a Dyson. Well, for what? I don't know what I bought it for.
You taking over for your super or something?
No,
you're vacuum the halls?
Dude, it's a beautiful piece of equipment. I go to PC Richards. Because I got the three cats now, and I got this woman coming over who's going to stay at my house while I'm gone. She's allergic to cats, and I'm going to put them in the other room, and she's going to feed them, but I didn't want cat hair all over everything.
Yeah.
So I tried this. That vacuum I had was like a Hoover Futura. It was like 20 years old. I got it from my aunt who died. All right, so like 10 years ago. Ridiculous. It was this little one. I was going to buy a canister vacuum. I was willing to spend like $400 on a good vacuum because I got the cats. All right? So I get there, and I just, the guy, you know, I don't know if they see me coming, but I already knew how much I was going to spend. This guy's like, I got cats, and I need a good vacuum. I'm looking at the Electrolux Oceana or whatever it is.
Oh, no, you don't.
And he goes, you want the best one for animals?
Dyson.
Well, yeah, but this is not just a Dyson. This is the new best Dyson.
The super
now,
sucker.
I'd read about Dyson. I'd read about the guy. I read about the design. It's a bagless vacuum. And I thought it was a pretty cool story. You know, the guy decided he's going to make this. It's like the Bang & Olufsen of vacuums.
Yeah.
You know, not only is it a good vacuum, but it's kind of cool, right? So I bought the damn thing. I put it on my credit card. It was like $550.
Oh, my God.
And it's not, I know, look, I could have bought a guitar. I don't know, but the sad thing is I got two area rugs. The rest is wood floors, right, and furniture. What the hell do I need it for, right? I call my wife. I'm like, I spent a lot of money on a vacuum. She's like, really? And she goes, how much? I'm like, it's like $500. She's like, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? And you know what? I'm thinking to myself, it's not like I have an excess of money, you know, but I'm like, yeah, I'm going to treat myself. So I bought this. Let me tell you something. Dude, wait, whoa, back up here. All right? It's made for, it says animal, right on it. It's a Dyson DC something for animals.
DC-3.
Whatever it is. All right? I took this thing out of the package. I was like, wow, you know, this is cool. I'm putting it together. I'm like, wow, this is really, because it's got this big clear canister that you just empty out. There's no bag.
It turns cat hair into mist.
But you don't even understand. I was vacuuming, and literally, I almost had some sort of strange orgasm experience. I got this thing out because, look, I'm but you got to understand something about me. I'm the kind of guy, I can watch my clothes dry and think I'm doing something. I can sit in a laundromat and go, wow, look at what I'm doing. Look at the clothes. I've just done something amazing. All right, so I put it on this area rug, this Dyson. I start vacuuming. Within seconds, the entire canister filled up with stuff. And I've had this area rug for like 6 months, so whatever I was doing before, didn't even match, right? Like, it was like, this was a new rug. And then I put the other connector. This thing, it just sucks it. Like, you wouldn't even believe it, right? And then I put the other thing on for the couch, and it's just pulling up. It's like, literally, it made it, like, brand new, and you could see the canister fill up, all right? And the suction was amazing. I can't even, you know what? I'm telling you something. The thing is so damn cool, I'm not putting it in the closet. It's sitting right in my living room. The thing is right in the living room. I'm leaving it out. You spend that kind of money on a vacuum cleaner, that's a piece of furniture. That's not just a...
This is better than digital cable, TiVo, the iPod, you name it.
If people come over, they're like, why is the vacuum on? No. Take a look at that thing. And you just... everything pops right off. You dump it out. It just, from that first vacuum experience, I want to get carpeting. Just like...
I got to tell you. The vacuum, right?
I got to tell you, man. It was amazing. It was... And I'm not, you know, I don't even know what you would call a guy who likes vacuuming. There's a lot of names, but... The truth of the matter is, I just appreciate the design, and it never is going to never lose its suction, and it's a.
We'll be right back after this word from Dirt Devil.
No, I'm going to go. I feel like vacuuming right. I'm bringing it in tomorrow. I'm going to do up in here.
You'll be here for a while if you do that.
So let's get in this. Every day we talk about some of the news stories that reflect the poopy job that President Bush is doing. And just, what was that? Where'd that come from? Did you just do that? Did you just do that with your mouth? Oh, my God, that sounded like, I was like, who's on the board?
Who
pulled the
board? I don't know who did that.
Oh, my God. All right. The world is swirling. Okay, President Bush is doing just how rapidly our world is swirling down the crapper. Incredibly, despite the fact we have 3 hours every day, we're not able to get to it all. So here's a quick rundown of just some of the stories we weren't able to get to today, representing just a partial 24-hour snapshot of the Bush storm.
Uh-oh.
All right. Associated Press headline. U.S. Embassy warns of threat in Kuwait. The U.S. Embassy in Kuwait warned 13,000 American citizens that terrorist groups are developing near-term plans for attacks against unspecified targets.
That would be you, citizens who are living in Kuwait.
13,000 people just sitting there waiting for something to happen. What are they going to do? They got to leave? I don't know. That's scary.
Can you say logjam at the airport?
Thank God the terrorist threat is no longer here in America since the election.
Right.
Associated Press headline, bomb at Shiite shrine kills 7 in Karbala. On the first day of campaigning in Iraq, a bomb targeting Shiite cleric Abdul Mahdi al-Karbalayi wounded him and killed 7 other people outside one of Iraq's holy shrines. What do you think that is, Riley? Who do you think's doing that?
That is probably aimed at Sistani, this particular cleric, Abdul Mahdi al-Karbalayi, is a representative of Sistani in that particular region.
So it's probably not jihadists, it's probably the ex-Baptists.
Sunnis, ex-Baptists, quite possibly.
Yeah, Washington Post headline, many FDA scientists had drug concerns. 2002 survey shows almost 1 out of 5 FDA scientists told the survey that they have been pressured by to recommend approval of a new drug, even though they had concerns about its safety.
Guess who pressured?
The pharmaceutical industry.
And their elected representatives.
Right. So they're being bullied because they've been turned out by the pharmaceutical industry, not unlike the USDA has been turned out by the beef industry. This is trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Wall Street Journal headline, as Bush sells second term agenda, new poll shows public's doubts, thank God. As President Bush opened a big public push to give investment brokers a piece of America's Social Security pie, a new poll finds that Americans consider the plan, quote, a bad by a margin of 50-38. That's good news, and we're going to talk about that more with our guest later. Yeah. We're going to talk about tort reform with
another shell game.
Dan Ziegert, writer and investigative journalist. So that's going to be exciting. So we're going to do all that and more when we come back. We're going to come back with Brendan P.W. McDonald, The Peanut Diaries, and Disney action. I'm going to leave that hanging. 17 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, fighting treason with reason on Air America Radio.
Vacuum my ceiling, man. Good morning, Sedition, Air America Radio. That's Mark Riley. I'm Mark Maron.
We are?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm going to vacuum the ceiling. It's got this technology. I can pull the thing out and pull the thing that, and just,
I take stucco off my wall?
How do I come out of back in black? You see, I didn't go home and party. I can't wait to get home and vacuum my other rug, man, with my new Dyson.
Uh-oh.
All right, dude. You know what time it is, Riley?
I'm not sure. I think I do, though.
Well, what time is it?
It's peanut butter jelly time! We've been
down a long road with our associate producer, Brendan P.W. McDonald. Just a few months ago, peanuts have the power to kill our beloved co-workers dead. Now he's eating them. He's eating them every day, experimenting with peanuts the way some of us experimented with drugs. A man who overcomes an allergy of such life-altering force needs to keep a journal, and that's why we bring you another entry in the Peanut Diaries. Good morning, Brendan.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Brendan.
How's it going?
It's going okay. I gotta say, though, I'm a little nutted out, man.
Yeah.
I think I busted a nut on these nuts.
Uh-oh.
I think
did you hit the nut wall?
A nut wall is approaching. If it's not hit. You know what the biggest problem is, Mark?
Yeah.
Put yourself in my position.
Yeah.
I haven't eaten these things in 25 years. And they build a certain mythology. It says, somebody said to me one time that Catholicism is why sex is so good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the same thing came with, you know, same concept could be applied to why I was what I was expecting through peanuts. And the actual, like, when I first ate regular peanuts and was, like, blown away by them. These they were great. But all the ancillary products, you know, stuff, the candy bars and stuff with peanuts in them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not satisfied, man. And I think I've expended all my energies into what I can actually eat that has peanuts in it.
Have you been seeking, like, overseas stuff? Have you been on the internet looking for things you could ship in?
No, but I did go down to Chinatown and they have, like, some stuff that's, like, you know, peanuts with coating on it that I'm not sure what it is. It's got like a picture of a robot on the front, and I don't really know what they're talking about. But that's about the farthest kind of ethnic.
But you've done the carts, right? The candy.
Oh yeah, and that stuff's good.
Yeah.
Like I think basically here's the general rule.
Okay.
And I'm not slipping into Pashman territory here. I just mean me personally.
Don't, no, because I'm wild through the door.
Wait a minute! Whoa!
Watch this. No?
I think my general rule is stick to peanuts.
Yeah.
Peanuts and regular peanut butter.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll be fine. And I like anything that's generally, you know, the dry roasted, honey roasted, chunky peanut butter, all of that stuff. And stuff just with regular peanut butter on it, like Ritz Bits sandwiches.
Sure.
Peanut butter, Thai peanut chicken, that kind of stuff.
Well, I think the one upside of this, Brendan, is you didn't get addicted, you know, because a lot of people do, you know, after they've been denied something that long that you might have had a peanut problem.
That's very true. But I think I had the wherewithal to keep it in perspective. You know?
Thank God.
Yeah.
So, so are we saying that the Peanut Diaries, this might be the end of it for now?
I'm going to close the door on them and treat peanuts the way, in an equitable fashion, in relation to other foods.
Now, what other things are you allergic to? Because maybe we can look forward to another breakthrough.
Dogs.
Oh.
Maybe, that one we're hoping on, because I love dogs, and I'd love to get one day.
So what happens when you touch a dog?
I just break out. It's not ugly. It's not pretty, rather. It's pretty ugly.
Wow. What else?
I'm still allergic to other nuts.
Oh.
You know, almonds.
Is there any hope of those, lifting? Or?
I'm told not.
Mm.
But the dogs, if they have drugs now you can take, so maybe I'll develop a dependency on them, and then we could talk about that.
Oh, okay.
So Wait a minute. You can't eat pistachios?
No, not at all.
Right. You don't know what you're missing.
That's one of four things that Riley actually eats.
That's right.
Well, I can see he's got red fingertips. Right,
that's
now.
Right.
So tell us about, if we got a minute or so, you had a good time in Disney World?
Oh, yeah. It was great. And you can say what you want about the brash consumerism of that place. It's really fun and fantastic.
And you like that kind of stuff, right?
Well, but even if you don't like that stuff, it's amazing how that place is put together.
It's a
city, Disney World. It's the size of San Francisco.
And what, you had your fiancé got her picture taken with Tigger?
Yeah, I made sure of that. I was like, we're documenting this.
The same Tigger that was accused of sexual harassment.
I wanted to clear his name, though. I was like, if he can sit here with her.
By using your fiancé?
Well, he wasn't tempted to touch anything, and I was proud of him.
Yeah.
And how do you know he wasn't tempted to touch anything?
Because he kept his hands away. He was just flouncing.
That doesn't mean he wasn't tempted.
I don't know. I trust Tigger.
And you got the feeling that Tigger was kind of shamed?
I think so. Well, he was kind of under, like, house arrest. They had him in buildings. You didn't see him walking around. He's a tainted character now.
And you said that you got your fiance a massage?
Yeah. Well, it was your birthday down there.
Hello, it's time for a massage!
Well, not by Tigger.
By Mickey?
Well, Mickey, we were talking about.
No, Minnie.
No, it was by a guy, but I don't know what suit he had on.
Oh, cross-dresser, huh?
I'm not sure. A Disney character. But he only had...
but a man dressed like Minnie.
Okay, maybe. He still only had three fingers.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, Brendan.
Yeah, no problem.
Appreciate it, man.
All right. We're going to be back with our guest, Dan Zagar. He's going to talk to us about tort reform and why it's bad.
Real bad. When we come back here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Four past the hour. Good morning, Charleston, South Carolina.
Yeah.
Well. Our new affiliate on WSSP. 7:30 a.m., Air America's 41st affiliate. Welcome aboard, folks. Welcome aboard.
Yeah, and later for that red state stuff.
Yeah. They're all, you know what I mean? That's all a myth. It's all a myth. It was pretty close all over, except in a couple of places.
Yeah, man. Hey, Charleston, South Carolina had plenty of Kerry people down there. Trust me.
There's plenty of Kerry people everywhere. Not just Kerry people, but people who are correct in their thinking.
Yeah, yes. Democrats, progressives. Yeah,
absolutely.
And people that Bill O'Reilly think are being funded with stealth money, but we'll get to that.
Ramon came in dressed as a fireman.
Ooh.
I don't know what that's about. I think he's going to do all the village people.
Uh-oh. Wait,
was there a fireman?
No, there was a construction worker, Indian cop. And there was one other one. I can't remember.
Come on, this is...
They danced well.
How can you not remember that? The sailor? Was there a sailor?
Yeah, there was a sailor.
No fireman.
In the Navy.
That's right. No fireman.
No. There's no in the fire.
Here's Bernie Carrick again. Day three. Bernie Carrick's Palm Pilot. Here's the Bernie schedule. 6 a.m. Wake up. Check along for reporters. Note. Where'd everybody go? I'm Bernie freaking Carrick. Oh! Oh! Any anybody? 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Sit around in my undershirt. In a couple of weeks, this could get old. 12:30 p.m. Work on memoir. Change phrasing from, quote, the Battery Park City apartment donated for weary police and rescue workers at Ground Zero to the joint where me and Judith Reagan used to do it. Oh! 1:30 p.m. Taser myself. Okay, that hurts. Good to know. 4 p.m. Drive to mall, detain random shoppers for questioning, make dozens of citizens arrest, declare myself chief of mall land security. 6 p.m. Go visit gym bags full of cash inside train station locker. Keep eye out for hot commuter and or homeless babes. Man,
whoa.
I know what's going to happen to me on the street. Hey, Marin, catch. Oh, 8 p.m. Post profile on Match.com. Seeking woman between 20. Seeking woman between 25 and 45 must be bad girl into bad cops. Contact me at BernieFrickinCarrot.com. Ooh, there you go.
Think somebody's got that domain name?
Yeah.
BernieFrickinCarrot.com.
I think he does.
Really?
You think we're making that up?
Hey, his boy got in his case too.
All right, right now, our guest is an investigative journalist. He recently wrote the Right Wing's Drive for Tort Reform for the Nation. He's the author of Civil Warriors: The Legal Siege on the Tobacco Industry. Dan Ziegart is with us. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning.
How's it going?
Clinging to life, but you guys must be used to that at this hour.
Yeah. We're not going to play any violins for you.
Oh, that's too bad.
We appreciate you being here. Give us the essence of tort reform, please, because we talk about it a bit here, but you're a pro. We want to know.
Well, I would say that, you know, tort reform is going to be this year's version of weapons of mass destruction. And the key phrase to listen for is frivolous lawsuits.
Right.
Some examples of frivolous lawsuits would be people using the legal system when their mother was raped in a nursing home. That's a frivolous lawsuit. If you're operated on and the surgeon kills you, that's a frivolous lawsuit. If you were to buy a bottle of a prescription drug and you'd suffered heart damage, that would be a frivolous lawsuit. All those things would be covered by so-called medical malpractice reform.
And this is the frame that the Bush administration is trying to sell to the people. Just yesterday, quoting Bush, he says, the cost of frivolous lawsuits in some cases make it prohibitively expensive for a small business to stay in business or for a doctor to practice medicine, in which case it means the health care cost of a job provider and job creator is escalating. Now, this is a load of it, right?
Yes, absolutely. The actual costs of medical malpractice to the medical system, and I'm talking about all the costs, including what it costs to hire the lawyers, including what it costs to buy the insurance policies, including what it costs to do so-called, quote-unquote, defensive medicine, is less than 2%. Of healthcare spending. That's not obviously possible to be driving healthcare costs 2%. And as far as the cost of businesses, just why we were talking about small businesses, is less than one half of 1%. It's barely measurable.
Now, Dan, isn't the Bush administration very cleverly tapping into people's existing negative feelings about lawyers and specifically, what people euphemistically call ambulance chasers? Haven't they been pretty skillful in doing that?
Yeah, they've been very skillful at doing that. And, they've really targeted the plaintiff's lawyers both symbolically so that they can get some legislation passed that they want to, and also practically, by doing that, they defund the plaintiff's lawyers, who are big Democratic contributors, and, you know, guess what? John Edwards was a plaintiff's lawyer, so they took John Edwards on this issue, and they used it very cleverly. And I think it had something to do with their margin in Florida, because they really harped on frivolous lawsuits when Dick Cheney campaigned in Florida.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, just, you know, how many that they were able to. It's just slanderous because so many of the politicians are lawyers, and they just were characterizing him in a way to make him, you know, seem like an ambulance chaser, which he wasn't, right?
No, absolutely not. I mean, at John Edwards' claim to fame as a plaintiff's lawyer, here's another frivolous lawsuit for you, was the case of a young girl named Valerie Lakey.
Oh, right, with the dream.
Yes. Mm. I'm not even going to go into the details because they're so horrific.
Right, yeah.
Suffice it to say that this is a little girl who got stuck on this defective pool drain, and there had already been numerous instances where this thing had injured children and had most of her intestines sucked out.
Okay? Yeah, yeah.
There's another frivolous lawsuit.
Yeah, so let's talk about then, you know, the myth is that these lawsuits are making the cost of health care go up, which is a lie. that they're trying to put out there to people who are uninformed? What is actually, you know, driving the cost of health care up? If you could go into that a little bit.
Sure. Well, okay. Let's break it down into two things. One is the cost of health care. The other is the cost of medical malpractice insurance, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Doctors have to have medical malpractice insurance. What's driving the cost of medical malpractice insurance is our good friends in the insurance industry.
Right.
Who have their own interesting way of running their business, which is that when times are good, they write policies for anybody, okay? I mean, that means anybody. You could be a doctor who's, you know, killed 30 people in a row. They'll write you a policy. And then when times are bad and the market tanks, all that money they invested from their good times in the market goes out the window. That's when they start raising their rates 100 and 200%, which is what's happened since the summer of 2001. Now, the other question is, what's really driving the cost of medical coverage? Well, surprisingly, it's providing medical coverage, which is, about 75% of our dollars go to caring for people at the end of their lives. And, you know, we youngins subsidize that. And there's really not a whole lot you can do about that except try and find a better health care system. But it doesn't have much to do with plaintiff's lawyers.
Dan, you know, you said something just now that struck me in terms of the idea that on the one hand you have these insurers investing their money, I assume in the stock market and mutual funds and, those same sorts of things that individuals do. And on the flip side, you also have a push by the Bush administration to have, individual retirees invest some of their money in the same markets. And I'm wondering what you might think the long-term impact would be if all of these different areas, if the market tanks and all of these different areas take a hit at the same time.
Well, you're going to have, probably something very reminiscent of what happened in the late 20s. I mean, if you string enough of the dominoes together, okay, in your economy, and you tie them to what the insurance industry does and what investors do, and you sort of rope all that to the stock market, and the air goes out of the bubble, I don't think it takes a lot of imagination to see that there's going to be some kind of a catastrophe. And I think the Social Security end of that is just absolutely insane. What it is the Bush administration is, to use Bill Greider's phrase, a great investigative journalist, ringing the dinner bell for the insurance industries, to have everybody come out and say, here's a huge pot of money that private people can get their hands on and invest in companies.
So now let's be clear about who the tort reform will help. The idea is that if they can put caps on the lawsuits, the corporations will be able to put that in their bottom line, and individuals who are hurt in these type of what they call frivolous lawsuits will not be able to really get the justice, and the corporations will be able to write it off.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. All right, I get that. So how do we reframe this issue for, to put it back in their face?
Well, let's start talking about, first of all, instead of talking about tort, quote, unquote, reform, let's use some language that fits the facts. Let's call it what it is. Let's call it victims' rights restrictions. We have something called the Seventh Amendment in this country, which guarantees us, right to a civil trial in civil matters. That happens to be a uniquely American right. It's not enjoyed in places like France and Germany and Japan.
Yeah.
Those countries have dedicated systems for taking care of victims. We don't have that. We have a good old entrepreneurial legal system. You go out and get your own justice.
Hmm.
So what's going to happen is you're going to have a situation like in Texas, where George Bush was successful in passing a lot of tort reform, and where people who are injured can't get lawyers.
Right. That's horrible. And as you were talking about the insurance industry, I mean, Bush just threw a big bone to this former governor of Utah, Leavitt, who's a scion of a family of insurers. I mean, this administration is owned by pharmaceutical companies, insurance agencies, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, and I think if you're going to really read up on an obscure industry that has about 49 tentacles that reach into every aspect of your life, the insurance industry would really be a good one. I mean, you wouldn't get any quick dates, by learning a lot about it, but it would actually help you understand what's going on in this country and in this economy.
Right. Okay. Well, then, that's our homework then.
Yeah, I think you guys should from now on dedicate your show to the insurance industry and what it does.
Well, we have a long list of things that people feel we should dedicate our show to, and we'll put that at the top for today and forget about it in a few days.
Why don't you do that?
Dan,
excellent idea.
We're going to definitely. I'm curious myself, because my father was a surgeon, and he's a guy that really feels duped and screwed by the HMO system.
Yeah.
You know that. You you know, this is a guy that worked all his life to do what he does the best he can do it. And these guys, you know, have a, you know, permanent triage going on where they limit surgeons and doctors' ability to function at their best.
That's right. And the thing is, if I can just say this, I don't have, if, you know, we're not running out of time, but, I mean, you know, that's part of the problem, too. The doctors are not the problem, obviously. Doctors are trying to provide medical care. But they are prevented from charging off their costs by HMOs. So
yeah.
They're trapped at both ends.
Man, it's a disaster. Dan Zeigart, thank you for joining us. The book is The Legal Siege on the Tobacco Industry. Also, you can see his article in The Nation. Great talking to you.
All right.
So we'll be back with what do we got coming up next there, Riley?
We got the liberal agenda.
We're going to talk about these loyalty oaths. This guy in Colorado who's part of the local government there who refused to stand up for the pledge, and now they're going to try and run him out of the government. We're going to talk to him. This is good stuff. It's 46 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, on the air and online at morningsedition.com from Air America Radio.
One past the hour, Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yes, it is.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Good morning, Charleston, South Carolina. We're on WSSP. It's 7:30 a.m., and that's our 41st affiliate. Very exciting. Now, let's talk about this. We're going to hopefully talk to a gentleman in Colorado, a man named David Habecker, who is a town trustee of Estes Park, Colorado. And he has refused to stand up for the Pledge of Allegiance because, quote, I have not been standing for the Pledge of Allegiance due to a conflict I have with the wording of the pledge, specifically the words under God, end quote. So he's got a problem with church and state issue. So now the rest of his fellow councilmen are going to try and vote him out because they're questioning his loyalty. They're questioning his patriotism, you know, because this is a guy that, you know, is upholding, you know, his individual right to not do something.
Yeah,
and to honor, you know, what a lot of people think is an overstepping. You know, the fact that they're saying the pledge, you know, in these council meetings, which is something apparently that was new.
It was new because they said they were doing it to reaffirm their loyalty during wartime.
Right. So now his loyalty becomes in question because he's not standing up. All right. Now, first of all, loyalty oaths are, you know, they're nasty bits of business.
Well, right? they have a long and sorry history in this country.
Right. During the Japanese internment, people were classified as pro-American or pro-Japanese and badgered into signing or rejecting loyalty oaths. During the McCarthy era, the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives overrode Truman's veto on the Taft-Hartley Act, which severely restricted the activities of labor unions. Labor unions had to sign a loyalty/disclaimer oath that they weren't a member of the Communist Party.
Mm-hmm. During the McCarthy era as well, there were loyalty oaths pushed by Joe McCarthy, of course, then Congressman Richard Nixon, and then FBI Director, J. Edgar Hoover.
Dig this. Two-thirds of the state legislators at the time passed laws requiring public employees to sign a loyalty oath rejecting communism.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people in our business, Mark, the Screen Actors Guild, the Directors Guild of America, the Writers Guild of America, and the American Federation of Radio and Television Artists also had loyalty oaths or rules that banned communists from becoming members.
And then later, in the 90s, the Republican House Committee chairmen were asked to sign loyalty oaths to pledge to vote with the leadership on economic issues contained in the contract with America. Now, a few other places of note in loyalty oathing.
Mm-hmm.
On August 20th, 1934, mandatory loyalty oaths to Hitler in person were introduced throughout the Reich. The English introduced loyalty oaths starting in 1673 with the Test Act aimed at Catholics and Protestants. These oaths required adherence to the rules of the Church of England. And during Joseph Stalin's reign, an oath of loyalty was imposed. And, of course, if you wanted to see the president or vice president campaign in this country, as you recall, you had to sign an oath. Now, before we talk to our guest, I just want to say Article 6, Clause 3 of the U.S. Constitution, for one, says, quote, no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States.
This is what happens when you see these local councils, these local boards over to the right wing. See, they've been doing this for years now. They have been getting their people elected into these positions, and the fact is that this is how people end up getting branded now as disloyal, as someone that's not prepared to stand up for their country. And again, it comes down to branding and framing. That's how this town council out there in Colorado, has framed this particular guy's decision.
Let's talk to him. On the phone from, he's coming up?
Yeah, he's coming up later.
Oh, I thought he was on the phone now.
No. He's coming up later.
All right. All right. So we'll talk to him in a minute then. All right. Just don't go crazy, Larson, in my head. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, if you're going to go crazy, you do it on the air.
Yeah.
This talking directly into my head stuff with you freaking out because I'm excited to talk to a guest. All right. And making me feel like I'm not doing my job properly. Have you ever signed a loyalty oath for anything?
I thought we signed one to Jonathan Larson when we took this job, didn't we?
Well, I'm breaking it right now. I'm over this, man. This codependency has got to stop. I'm done with it.
Oh, Lord.
Someone's got to get to an Al-Anon meeting.
Well, wait a minute. You know, then we don't want to get too deep into that. But
what?
Look.
Into what? My personal problems?
No. We keep talking about Jonathan, you know where we're going to go.
No. I love Jonathan Larson. We couldn't do it without him.
I know that. But,
there's
something you refrained from talking about earlier that we don't need to bring up now. Anyway. Yeah.
I don't even know what you're referring to.
I know.
So, but this comes into, like, what you're saying about these people that have infiltrated local governments and these people that are imposing their morality on other people, the sort of crystal fascist zombie brigades of the neocon death cult and all its manifestations are a real danger to this country. And they don't realize that, you know, the separation between church and state protects everybody.
This starts at the top. They're trying to do it within the Congress and through the courts on the federal level. And then it's also a movement from the bottom up with town councils like this place in Colorado.
Right.
So you've got the pressure coming, and they're trying to meet somewhere in the middle.
But see, the thing is that coerced loyalty is meaningless in a lot of ways. And the only thing that it stands to do is, you know, bully somebody out of a position in order to fill it with one of their own.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what these people do because they're ambitious. They have a lot of time on their hands. They have a very specific agenda. And let's not forget, this is a small percentage of this country that happens to be mobilizing in a very big way on a propaganda level and also on just a grassroots level. So we can't let them bully us.
Well, they can be beat.
I have the liberal agenda somewhere.
Oh, yes, I'm sure you do.
There was a fact, so I must have it.
Right, there you go.
One, support reindeer legislation that will finally make it legal for Dancer and Prancer to get married. For our Charleston listeners, this is from the Streisand compound. It's our liberal agenda. We get it every day. Two, calculate number of edgy independent films that could have been produced with the $85 million the military spent on the failed missile defense system test.
Mm.
Three, with scissors, turn worthless U.S. dollars into colorful holiday snowflakes. Decorations. Four, give your significant other a rare and valuable holiday gift, a flu shot. Five, today's phrase just dropping into conversation. You know that Santa at the mall, man? Homeland Security, buddy. He's gathering intelligence on you, man. In a couple of weeks, he'll be coming down your chimney, man. Wake up, people. It's the Fat Man.
In the next hour, I'm sure some of you know that Thomas Wilson was not the first person to talk to Donald Rumsfeld about those unarmed Humvees. We're going to talk to the guy who told Donald Rumsfeld about it a year ago when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Edition on Air America Radio.
Hi, I'm Mark Maron. You're listening to Air America Radio at 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, men, children, women, girls, sexually confused people. Good morning to you. And don't worry, it'll resolve itself. If not, you know, you just have fun for as long as it lasts. That's all. Just reaching out to the people. That's all I'm doing, Mark Riley.
That's a good thing to do.
Yeah, why not? I'd like to say good morning to my mother in Florida, who should be running right now. I heard you on my headphones. I was running. Thank you. I love you. My mother is too much. I'll say, yeah, why not say goodbye? Goodbye. Say good morning to my father. He's probably up and bitter already.
Oh, man.
Come on.
Man.
I can't wait to get home and vacuum. That's all I'm thinking about, my new Dyson. What's wrong with me? You know what's sad about me buying a Dyson vacuum cleaner is that it is the most expensive thing I own. If somebody broke into my house and said, let's steal something, that'd be the best they could get. It's the Dyson vacuum cleaner.
Dyson vacuum cleaner.
My computer's outdated. all right? My printer's not worth that much. My guitar, well, maybe my guitar.
Your guitar's a Mark Maron, isn't it?
Well, yeah, oh, yeah, they make guitars for me. I'm a famous guitar
player.
Right
next to Les Paul.
I'm one of the best bedroom guitar players in this city.
There
man.
You go.
I played with all the greats. I'd like to share with the audience an interesting bit of speculation that Kalo, our board op, just did. See, I'm drinking tea, and I'm putting lemon in it, and I'm putting honey in it, right? And you said, what did you say, Kayla? You said, can you do that? Can you put honey and lemon together
or
something?
Yeah, because doesn't it curdle?
No, see, nothing. There's nothing to curdle there. And then I told you that lemon will curdle dairy products. Like, if you put milk in tea with lemon, that will curdle. So then Kayla sits there for a few minutes with sort of a pensive and pondering look on his face, and he just says, oh, man, if you put lemon in cereal, that would be bad. He was working on it. He's like, you know, just A plus B equals, I'm not going to put lemon in the cereal.
Yeah,
like,
but then he wanted to know about lemon and mayonnaise.
Mayonnaise is not dairy. It's dairy in terms of eggs, but it's really just eggs and oil.
Eggs and oil, I think, and, you know, some of those other things that we see on the ingredients thing that we never pay any attention to because we don't know what they are.
I think it's just eggs and oil. I think so. I can't wait to leave. I'm going crazy. I'm going to go home and vacuum. This Dyson thing, it's a new apartment.
Really?
I saved the bedroom. I'm not going to do this to tomorrow. I'm going to have a good time.
You need to vacuum, the halls of your building, or maybe go to that crazy lady that lives near you and ask her, does she have anything that needs vacuuming, just to get it out of your system.
I'm so nervous about the woman next door. I haven't seen her in a few days. Her Social Security check's still in the mailbox. It's giving me the willies.
How do you know her Social Security check is still in the mailbox?
Because she told me she didn't know where her key was, and she was trying to use her apartment key to open the mailbox, so I told the mailman that I would give her her stuff. She's 107,
mm-hmm.
and she's this size of she's the size of this mug right here.
Never learned how to pick a mailbox?
No, I tried to pick it. You can't pick it. But anyways, I'm just worried about the lady. I got to go next door. I got to find out what's going on with her.
Yeah.
Also, quick cat report. Everybody's good. They're still a lot nicer. I'm starting to worry about the one across the street at the Yemeni deli, but I'm not going over there because I don't want that guy to tell me. It's like, what did you give me, my friends? This guy is crazy. I don't know what to do. Yeah, I don't want to deal with it, so I can't even go get milk. I want to get ice cream last night. My codependency is actually helping me stay fit. I was going to go get ice cream at the deli, and I'm like, I can't go in there because I don't want the guy to try and make me get that cat back. I don't want that cat back.
Take cat back.
He's a nice guy. Take him home now. There's no way I'll be able to get him back in the cage.
Bigger cage.
Nope. There's no way.
Call friend Rachel. Have her come.
Raquel.
Raquel, sorry.
No, I think the cat will be fine. I'm not even going to worry about it. Let's get into some stuff, man. You know, it's like, if it's Christmas is coming up.
Christmas came early, though, for one person.
The holiday season. I bought my wife another present yesterday.
Really?
Yeah, you know what I've got her, Riley?
What?
She doesn't listen to the show, I can tell you. I mean, she's always like, you're doing a great job. I'm like, when was the last time you listened? May.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm kidding. She'll be in. Maybe she'll come in next week. I found her the you know what's out on tape? That the Richard Pryor show.
Oh, okay.
Which was on for only, they only did maybe 8 or 9 of them. He had a network television show.
It was a great show.
And so they shut it down, right? And so it's available now. She's a huge Pryor fan, so I got her that. I got her the Ben Stiller, but I hope she's not listening.
Well, you never know. Sometimes you all have conversations before we even get on the air, so she might be.
I don't know where what's that, Chris?
Ask her to call in if she's listening.
She's not listening. It's 4 in the morning. My wife will sleep till noon. You know what I mean? But she's great. I don't want to say anything bad. I'm going to see her on Friday. And she's coming back with me, Kayla. She's coming back to New York for a week.
Oh,
I got this woman who's allergic to cats who's going to watch my cats. How's that going to work out?
Can I wish a happy Christmas to somebody? Even though it's early.
Why are you asking me? Go ahead. It's your show.
I want to say Merry Christmas to Louisiana Congressman Billy Tozan. Not William, not Bill, Billy.
And why would you do this?
Because
is this an ironic
he is cashed in.
What do you mean?
He's retiring from Congress and taking a job with, ka-ching, the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America. He is the guy who wrote the Medicare prescription drug benefit. And his payoff is a $2 million a year gig.
He's the criminal that made it more difficult for old people to get their medicine in an understandable way.
Yeah, that's one.
He's the criminal that made it easier for the pharmaceutical company to decide what the pricing of medication for old people should be.
And now he's a lobbyist.
Mm-hmm.
Chief lobbyist.
Well, then it's only a matter of time before he's a cabinet member.
No. At $2 million a year, it'll be a couple of years before he's been existing on $100,000 a year as a congressman.
Wow.
So this is the big payoff.
This is the gift from the Bush team.
Merry Christmas, Billy.
You know, every day we talk about some of the news stories that reflect the poopy job that President Bush is doing. I like the word poopy. And just how rapidly our world is swirling down the crapper. Incredibly, despite the fact we have 3 hours every day, we're not able to get to it all. Imagine that, people. So here's a quick rundown of just some of the stories we weren't able to get to today, representing just a partial 24-hour snapshot of the Bush the Bush storm. Reuters. Yes. It's such a funny-looking word. Reuters headline, Iraq insurgents growing more effective, says U.S. General. Air Force Lieutenant General Lance Smith, Deputy Chief of U.S. Central Command, told reporters that the insurgency in Iraq, quote, is becoming more effective. So what does that mean? We're losing?
This means they're restating the obvious.
They're using more explosives, apparently, and they're getting more selective of where they place those explosives.
Yeah.
Reuters headline, U.S. missile defense test fails. The first test in almost 2 years of the multi-billion-dollar anti-missile shield failed when an interceptor missile shut down before launch, making it unlikely that President Bush will fulfill his pledge to have the system up and running by the end of the year.
This is an $85 million stinker. People are pointing fingers all over Washington trying to find out who's responsible.
It hasn't been a stinker since Reagan thought up this idea?
Yeah, that was Star Wars back in the day.
The New York Times headline, money for vaccinating children is diverted, officials say. Federal health officials say that taxpayer money is being used to pay for experimental flu vaccine for adults, even though it was intended to be used to vaccinate children. Nice.
Be careful of those experimental vaccines.
Yeah, those are the ones.
They can kill you.
They can get you. Associated Press headline, 2004 continues trend of global warming. According to a UN weather agency, this year, 2004, was the fourth hottest year in record history, meaning that the top 10 warmest years in history have all occurred since 1990. So we're going to reach our goal by a consistent temperature of about 92 degrees planet-wide.
Lilacs will be blooming in sometime before the end of this month.
You can get a tan in a minute.
Yep.
All right. Associated Press. Headline, Bush view of economy at odds with forecast. Really? The Bush presidency is living in a different world than the rest of us?
Yeah.
President Bush kicked off a two-day summit on policy issues such as taxation and Social Security, but virtually none of the participants or moderators offered any input out of line with Bush's plans. In fact, even some of Bush's past supporters say they oppose elements of his proposed policies, and we're going to get into that.
Well, you know what? I think this is part of that framing thing that we've been talking about. I don't think this meeting ever intended to actually have an exchange of ideas. I think these guys all got together so that they can all be on the same page in terms of the way they frame their crap.
That's right. Social Security?
Yep.
What's it going to be? Come on, Lucky 24.
Oh, man.
Damn, I guess I'll be eating cat food. 15 past the hour. We'll be back with more on that Bush summit after this. Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition. It's not Marxism. It's Marxism. Mark Maron and Mark Riley every morning on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Morning Sedition on Air America. Counting the minutes to go home and vacuum. It's ridiculous what a charge I got, you know. I spent a little money on that. I told my wife that I bought this, you know, $500 vacuum cleaner. She's like, what are you, crazy? I'm like, it's tremendous. It comes apart. It's got extensions. It's got these things on it. You can vacuum the ceiling. This thing flies. You seen the Jetsons? That's how powerful the suction is on this thing. You can fly on it. Nothing?
Wow.
I'm telling the truth, Kalo. What are you doing? I'm telling the truth. You got to get it. All right, forget it.
We're looking at this up as we speak.
I can't afford it.
I can't either. But you know what? I told you, it's so cool looking. It's like the Bang & Olufsen of vacuum cleaners, the Dyson. I'm not putting it in the closet. It stays right in the living room. I'm going to put it right in the center of the coffee table.
This guy looks like a young Jack Kevorkian.
Really?
Yeah, he does. He's right here.
The Dyson guy?
Yeah.
All right. Listen, I had to cancel therapy today because I'm doing Conan O'Brien tonight. They called me.
All right. Yeah.
I think I got some funny stuff. You know, they called me up yesterday. They're like, we do it. And I'm like, yeah, sure, I will. I'll call you back.
Hey. Wow.
So now I got to deal with another week load of dreams. So this is last night, of course, after the vacuuming. This is what enters my head somehow. I'm exchanging gifts with my wife, Mishna. We're not religious, but we have a tree, colored lights, the whole pagan solstice thing. You know what I'm saying? There's a big stack of presents around the tree. I tell Mishna, open the present. I got it. I got her a watch. Very nice watch. Even in my dreams, I have excellent taste. She hands me a box and smiles and says, I got this for you. I got this just for you. I tear open the shiny red paper and open the lid. Out came ten blue gremlins with sharp little teeth and evil little smiles, screeching, crapping into their hands and throwing it everywhere. Mishna says, open the next one. I'm a little nervous, obviously. So while the gremlins are setting fire to my sofa, I tear open a pale blue Tiffany's box and a nest of cobra swithers out, spreading their hoods and spinning and lunging at the cats. Mishna says, quick, open that one. I'm like, why? And I open the next box and it's a school of piranhas. And they manage to turn over their fishbowl and swim to the dinner table and strip our turkey clean in about 20 seconds. You should have seen it, Riley. So my floor is covered with crapping gremlins, a spitting cobra, 10 of them, and a hungry and like a bunch of hungry piranhas. You know, the usual holiday stuff. Mishna says, open that one. I'm like, oh, God. So I open this big green box, and an army of tiny neocons come streaming out with their anti-gay marriage signs and their Dockers and their NASCAR hats. I say, honey, why'd you give me those? She says, they're food. Feed them to the other things. So I pick up a fat little neocon, I drop him screaming into the mouth of a cobra, and then I grab a handful of neocons and red polo shirts and toss them to the cackling gremlins, and then I dunk some neocons in the water and let the piranhas have at them. It was excellent. For the next 30 minutes, my apartment was filled with these hideous, wet, crunchy sounds. Finally, when all the neocons had been eaten, the gremlins and cobras and piranhas flopped on the floor and gorged, sleeping. I think the piranhas might have died. It's not good for fish to be out of water too long. So I put my arm around Mishna and I said, thanks, sweetheart. It's just what I wanted. I woke up and my bed was filled with gold medal flour.
Ooh.
What a wonderful, wonderful dream that was. There's nothing better than having miniature people in your dream that talk. Because it's a very powerful feeling to have a bunch of miniature people in your dream.
And they used to show those movies back in the day. Mm-hmm. You know, those miniature people in them.
Let's get to this Bush summit. Come on, buddy.
All right. Here's the thing about the Bush summit, and we ought to be real clear about what's going on here.
It's a bunch of people who have a lot of money that they all donated. They own this president, and they just sat around and said, yep, yeah, great, good, yes,
it's
great.
Deeper than that. George Lakoff knows what they're doing. This is a massive reframing that's getting ready to go on.
Mm.
Okay? Now, let's talk about the elements of the reframing. Or actually, not the reframing, the reassertion of existing framing. Frame number one, Social Security is in crisis.
Yeah.
And must be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Damn. But what are you going to do?
Which
is a lie. Okay. Frame number two, lawsuits are killing the healthcare industry in this country.
Another lie.
Of course it's another lie. But see, what they're doing, and it dawned on me that this is not something that began with George W. Bush. It didn't even begin with Adolf Hitler. There have been propagandists who have been creating frames for centuries. And what we're seeing now is an extension of the same kind of framing, the extension of saying to people so that people who are kids now, people who are teenagers now, will believe in 5 years that Social Security is in crisis.
Yeah, I remember the Social Security debate of the Middle Ages.
Well, yeah, and lawsuits killing health care. If they can't get it passed now, they know that by doing this sort of thing, they will raise a generation of kids who will believe that doctors are getting out of the business en masse because the frivolous lawsuits and juries are handing out awards that are entirely too large.
Yeah, and if you go back to ancient Rome when the tort reform first reared its ugly head in the original frame,
you know who did a lot of this. And see, I know this because black people have always had to reframe in this society.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a requirement of being black.
Okay? Yeah.
And Marcus Garvey, for example, was a reframer. Marcus Garvey was a person who decided that black was beautiful, something that during his time was unheard of to talk about. But he reframed the argument for black people, and that's all that Bush is doing. He is reframing these arguments so that the American people, he won't have to argue with the Democrats, because those arguments will be useless because he's got the Congress on his side, and he believes that by having these kinds of meetings and telling everybody, by the way, this is another frame, the economy's doing great.
Well, that's crazy. And the only positive in this whole thing is that a new poll showed that the public have doubts about the plans, and these doubts are substantial. The public, by 50% to 38%, is inclined to believe it's a bad idea to let workers invest Social Security taxes in the stock market. I guess it doesn't take a genius to figure that out. Now, with the tort reform, because so many people, they've effectively demonized lawyers,
mm-hmm.
may not see the truth of this thing. And the truth of this thing is, if you put caps on those lawsuits, people will not be able to get the justice that they deserve, and they will not be able to teach the corporate criminals a lesson. Because if there's a cap on those lawsuits, then the corporations that are potential criminals will not feel it necessary to change their policies that may be damaging or dangerous, and also they can just add the potential lawsuits into their bottom line.
Mm-hmm. And George W. Bush understands that there is no Democrat/progressive summit like the one he's having to frame the debate on our terms. Mm-hmm. He understands that. All of these corporate honchos that he's got at these series of meetings, Time Warner, J.P. Morgan Chase, all these, they all have a vested financial interest in promoting these specific policies. The tax cuts being made permanent. Another thing, you know, permanent tax cuts make the economy great. Another lie. But it's something that he's trying to sell.
It's time for people to start getting in touch with their elected officials about this stuff, showing your contempt for it or your disagreement with it by writing your congressmen, writing your senators. I mean, this is important stuff that's going to affect our lives. I'm a 41-year-old person. It's going to affect my life. It's going to affect your children's lives.
Yep.
And if you're concerned about this stuff, we know you're not all red out there, and we know that not all of you agree with this guy. A lot of you don't, most of you. This is stuff that's going to affect our future. Take some action now.
Yep. When we come back, Brandon Sandrell is going to be joining us. He's going to talk about that Humvee armor that he told George W. Bush about a long time ago. Air America Radio.
Past the hour, I am Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. You might be listening to it for the first time in Charleston, South Carolina, where we are on WSSB 7:30 a.m. That's of Air America's 41st affiliate. Surprise, Air America haters, we're succeeding.
There you go.
Good morning to you, seethers, you guys who are wrong. It's pretty exciting, isn't it?
They've all changed their minds, though. The ones that said it wouldn't last a week are now saying, oh, what a brilliant idea. I'm glad I thought of it.
Let's talk about Humvees for a minute, because our guest, who we're going to talk to in just a couple minutes, Brandon Sandrell, he was actually injured in Iraq.
Yeah.
And while he was in the hospital, Rumsfeld, you know, the neocon death cult's war representative, dropped by and had a few words with this guy we're going to talk to in a minute. And this guy said to him, you know, then, you know, this is screwed up. We're not equipped properly.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk to him about that. And I just want to, you know, throw out, he's a former specialist in the military police company, the National Guard. He was in Iraq for 3 months, from June to September 2003. So this was in, you know, from the troops' point of view, this was in Rumsfeld's head for a long time. And we've been talking about it since we've been on the air.
Yeah.
Okay, of the 19,782 Humvees currently in the Iraq theater, only a little more than a quarter are fully armored, to the point where these guys have had to do, like, you know, monster truck Jesse James action on these things by getting scrap metal, you know, and welding it on themselves. Another quarter of the Humvees and most heavy trucks have no armor at all. The remaining Humvees were modified with add-on kits after being sent to Iraq when the military realized the vehicles weren't properly equipped. But these add-on Humvees sometimes break down under the weight or move too slowly in dangerous situations. They had no idea that the insurgency was going to fight the way it was going to fight. They had no exit strategy, and they really didn't know what they were up against. And now, as we reported earlier, the insurgency is getting stronger and more proficient with their bombs along the side of the roads.
Yeah, and that is what is putting the most number of American troops at risk in terms of the information that we've gotten, that you know, they have become improvisational, and the U.S. military has just not been able to keep up in terms of, you know, providing defenses for a lot of, and we saw the situation where people didn't even want to take the Humvees on the transport runs up to the northern part of the country.
Let's talk. Can we talk to Brandon right now? And then we're going to play a little bit of sound for him, too. Brandon Sandrell, former specialist in the military police company in the National Guard. Good morning to you. How you doing, buddy?
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
All right.
Great. Good morning. All right. We want to play. Let me play a little bit of sound for you here. This is Rumsfeld, you know, talk. This is Specialist Thomas Wilson asking Rumsfeld that question. Can we hear that, Kayla?
Our soldiers have been fighting in Iraq for coming up on 3 years. A lot of us are getting ready to move north relatively soon. Our vehicles are not armored. We're digging pieces of rusted scrap metal and compromised ballistic glass that's already been shot up, dropped, busted, picking the best out of this scrap to put on our vehicles to take into combat.
And let's hear Rumsfeld's response, Chris.
Since the Iraq conflict began, the Army has been pressing ahead to produce the armor necessary at a rate that they believe, it's a greatly expanded rate from what existed previously, but a rate that they believe is the rate that is all that can be accomplished at this moment.
God, you can't get a straight answer out of that guy, can you, Brandon?
No, I can't.
So now you know firsthand why these Humvees need armor. Why don't you tell us about the insurgent attack that put you in the hospital there?
Oh, well, we were on a patrol in Baghdad, in downtown Baghdad, and we were on a normal patrol at night, and we were riding down this road, and there were three vehicles in our little convoy there, and these guys threw a hand grenade at us.
Mm.
When they did, it rolled under our third Humvee and blew up on the other side, but it didn't hurt anything or anybody. Well, me and the first two vehicles, I'm in the middle at this point, we turn around to check on the third vehicle to, you know, try to cover it to see, just in case it did get hit. And we see these guys jump in a van and take off. Of course, we follow them. We pursue them, and we're following them. And me and my gunner in the second vehicle at this point see the van turn to the left. The first vehicle didn't see them, and they come on the radio, you know, where'd they go, where'd they go. So, I yelled on the radio that I saw them turn left, and my gunner yelled. He said he saw him turn left, so they let me jump out front. So we're still chasing them at this point, and they pull on off and leave us a little bit.
Mm.
And so I'm still going down the same road, and I top this little ridge, and there the van is on the right, and they're running off to the left. So, I see this black bag in the middle of the road, and I knew what it was from seeing them previously, and I jerked the wheel to the right. And as soon as I got beside it, it got right beside my door, and it exploded.
It destroyed the Humvee?
It did.
And what kind of injuries did you sustain from that, Brandon?
Well, my whole left side was pretty much messed up. I had shrapnel in my right calf, my right foot, and my left calf. It went through my left calf and to the bone. It broke my left foot. I had an open fracture in the left foot, and then it almost blew my arm completely off. Walter Reed, they were going to take it, but I wouldn't let them. And I'm completely deaf in my left ear.
Well, man, I'm sorry to hear that. Now, let me ask you a question about that. Do you think that if this Humvee was armed properly, that you wouldn't have sustained these injuries?
Oh, I know I wouldn't have. I may have, if it was armed properly, I may have suffered a slight hearing problem, maybe, from the loudness of it. But as far as stuff going through the floor and hitting me in the legs and through the door and coming up and getting my arm, there's no way I'd be, right here. I would have still been over it.
Now, Brandon Sandro, describe for us what happened. You were in the hospital, and the Secretary of Defense came to visit you and others, I guess, who were injured, to thank you for your service. What made you decide to bring up the issue of armament for the Humvees to Secretary Rumsfeld?
Well, I really didn't think about it. Before he came in, I didn't sit there and say, well, I'm going to ask him this, I'm going to ask him that. I wouldn't have asked him if he didn't ask me first.
Right.
Actually, well, I was just sitting there, and, he's making his rounds just like all the other people do, and, he just looked at me, and my mother was in the room, too, and he said, well, what do you guys need over there? This is after he asked me what had happened and how it had happened, and thanking me and everything.
Uh-huh.
I said, look, we need up-armed Humvees. I said, I'm in the National Guard, and we didn't have them, and we're in the heart of Baghdad, in the worst part of Iraq, and we have light Humvees.
So let's wait for a second and find out what he said after this break, Brandon. Okay, we'll be back with Brandon Sandrell, former specialist in the Military Police Company and National Guard, who we are hearing his story about his encounter with Donald Rumsfeld, and we'll hear Rumsfeld's reply after this. It's 41 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Good morning. It's 4:30.
47 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yes, I am.
The program is Morning Sedition. You're listening to Air America Radio. Our guest on the phone is former specialist in the military police company of the National Guard, Brandon Sandrell, who was in Iraq for 3 months from June 2003 to September. He was injured in battle, and while in the hospital, he had a conversation with Donald Rumsfeld about what he thought was a pressing problem in terms of the equipment that they were forced to use, which wasn't equipped properly. And Brandon, what was the response of the Donald Rumsfeld?
Well, after I asked him, he said, he just looked at me and said, we're working on it.
That's it.
That's it. And at the time, you know, I said, okay.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I didn't go any further with it.
So the real issue is that this is over a year ago.
This is September 03?
Yes.
And then he talks to Specialist Wilson the other day, who, you know, asked him that question and just bumbled his way through a rationalization. This is over a year later. It hasn't been done. How does that make you feel?
Well, it kind of makes me mad.
Yeah.
Because they've had a year to work on it.
Yeah.
And I understand that, you know, it takes time to get stuff over there, but a year later, and no telling how many soldiers later, they should have this problem fixed.
And, you know, how did you feel when this is Donald Rumsfeld, and he says, you know, you don't go to war with the army you want. You go with the one you have. I mean, I'm assuming you must have felt when you got into this that you were with the best army in the world, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, I still feel I am with the best, well, I was with the best army in the world, but not the best well equipped, maybe.
Right. And so, well, yeah, obviously the guys you were with and what you guys went through, you know, certainly that was the best, but these are the guys in charge of you know, you shouldn't be put in a situation where you got to improvise, you know?
Exactly. I don't care how much money it costs, how much the national debt is, the soldier is the best in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Brandon, one of the other things that has been brought up in terms of certainly the Secretary of Defense's handling of the war is the question of whether or not equipment for regular troops is better than the equipment that was given to the reserves and the National Guard. Was that ever a concern or a consideration for you, a National Guardsman, while you were in Iraq?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you could definitely see the Humvees that the active duty Army had compared to ours. You could definitely see the difference. Theirs were all up armor, and, you know, they were nice or well protected, and ours weren't.
Were you with guys that were bringing their own equipment?
Yes, I was.
Like, what was some of the stuff that they brought?
That we brought into Iraq?
Yeah, I mean, just so you could protect yourselves, knowing that you might not have this stuff.
Well, just, we would bring, like, little personal radios so we could keep in contact with each other.
Mm-hmm.
GPSs, a lot of people brought, you know, their own GPS.
Which are?
Which, global positioning.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
The pluggers, the ones that the Army provided us with, you know, they weren't very accurate.
Mm,
really? Now, Brendan, you talked when you were describing the attack on your Humvee. You talked about the fact that you know, as soon as the Humvee apparently was abandoned, some of the people that came out to try and help you took fire from rooftops. Did that say to you that the attack on your Humvee was a planned attack?
It was. They set us up big time. And, you know, if we'd have thought about it a little bit more, instead of, you know, our adrenaline was going so bad, and the night before, actually, we had gotten shot at the same spot, and we didn't, you know, pursue it or anything. But this night, I mean, they set us up. Mm-hmm. They had to.
So let me ask you now, are you feeling okay? How's the treatment been since you've gotten back? Are they taking care of you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
You know, I'm good.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, that's excellent. Listen, you know, we want to, because I know that not everybody does this all the time. I know Rumsfeld did, and it was kind of empty. But we want to thank you for the service that you gave to the country. You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of times people say, well, it's a liberal network. They don't really care about the troops. We care, and we thank you for what you did.
Well, thank you guys for what you're doing. And I would do it all over again if I could.
Okay, well, thank you, Brandon Sandrell. Really appreciate you talking to us today, and you take care of yourself.
Thanks, Brandon.
Okay.
Take care.
Wow, man. Now, you know, every time we talk to those guys, you know, and you hear the details, the stories of where they were when we talked to Massey, mm-hmm. Jimmy Massey, who's going to be on Friday, tomorrow.
Yes.
about what he went through. You know, certainly he's coming from a different place. But, you know, this guy's, you know, his heart's in the right place, and, you know, he's doing all right.
And see, the concerns about the Humvees, the concerns about who gets the best equipment over there, these are concerns that weren't just, begun when Thomas Wilson asked Rumsfeld about it. These have been apparently long-standing concerns.
It's just interesting to me, too, and horrifying that the guys that, you know, that didn't expect to be going necessarily, National Guard and the people that were, you know, not hard Army or what do you call it?
The regular
Army. You know, they were the guys that were the least equipped. You would think that they would be equally, if not better, equipped, you know, just to, you know, because they haven't been in perpetual training.
Well, yeah, because the question that has to be asked is, why does the world's greatest military have to do equipment triage? That doesn't make any sense.
I can't, you know, the trap that those guys set, you know, that was, you know, that's the kind of tactics that I guess are on the rise and that they're growing better at.
Well, they're getting better at them and they're planning these things out, just like they planned the withdrawal of Fallujah before the U.S. troops got there. They left some people there to stay and fight. These people are apparently really good at improvisational guerrilla warfare.
Well, yeah, well, that's all they got.
Yeah.
Yeah, and now they're fighting each other.
That's all the North Vietnamese had, though.
It's chaos.
Yeah.
So, look, the Bible's book of Revelation, segue, portends the end of days and the second coming of the Christian Messiah, one of our president's favorite stories. Though no one knows when the end times will come, there are signs that will appear to men. Here on Morning Sedition, we won't let you be caught off guard by the end of the world. That's why we present this week's Rapture Watch with MILF Cardinal Milfington of the recently disgraced Diocese of Smileyburg, Kansas. Your Grace.
Gather round, ye impious Philistrians. Heed my warnings, thou mammon-loving sons of serpent kissers. I'm not going to tell you again, ye boggle-mystic Ligulians, and all you non-believers too tied up in your own head trips to realize boggle-mystic Ligulians aren't real words. Well, guess what? They are now. Because where you're going, words aren't going to matter. Shundamantata concita tamantata satata chambuchaka. No, I'm not having a stroke. I'm speaking in tongues. Last hebdomenial, you may recall I told you about flesh-eating bacteria that leaves skin intact while leaving its victims looking like human balloons. The weakest before that, I told you about a man who bit a dog. And the weakest before that, I told you about former Italian Prime Minister Romano Prodi forming a group of 9 opposition parties to unseat current Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi to challenge his plan to revive the economy by cutting income taxes. All right, I should have closed with the flesh-eating bacteria. Well, that's neither shuntata nor moonsita buntata. Because there's a darkness on the edge of town, heathens, and its name is Christmas. The most pagan of holidays not sanctioned by the Bible. For according to researchers at the University of California at San Diego, or UCS Demonic, more people die of heart attacks on Christmas Day than on any other day. This is not news, gluttons, for it was prophesied in a little-known poem in Revelation 1 Adam 12, we have a bear attacking a fat man. And I quote, 'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse, except Uncle Herbie, whose pathetic life at most is an omelet of darkness on top of bleak toast. Anyway, it seems Uncle Herbie had been up all night, celebrating the loss of one more day in his life. He drank past his limit, cramming food down his throat, until his kidneys did bleed and his liver did bloat. In his stomach sat a big ball of gluten, while the pores on his face looked like cheese they were sputin'. His colon did kink, did buckle and shudder, while it oozed a soft substance, much like fresh butter. Oh yeah, Herb's a sleazeball, but wait, there's much more. His son's a pusher, his mother a whore. And all through the night, as his stomach did gurgle, he dreamt of a neighbor's freezer to burgle. Just then, through the hallway, Santa did skulk, dragging behind him his big bag of bulk. He laid down the presents one by one, a pile of sawdust, a whole wheat bun, a bucket of bran, nitrate-free sugar plums. And when he was finished, Herbie was dead. A vessel broke or something, and Santa was taken downtown for questioning. Shun boom ta 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 ta. End quote. So have fun this Christmas Day, rifling through the bowels of yet another bacteria-infested turkey. And when you're done being led by Satan into the dungeon of genital munching nutrients, accompanied by an Alicia Keys tune. You'll regret the day you never invited me. Until then, keep on fornicating, fornicators, and we'll keep the light on for you. In hell!
Whoa. Yeah, well, you know, happy holidays.
Happy holidays,
Cardinal.
Cardinal?
Thank you very much.
Everything okay?
Yeah, you all right?
Yeah, I'm all right. You know, a lot of personal problems. So Dick Clark having a stroke, really. Just can't believe it happened.
No New Year's Rockin' Eve for you, huh?
You still on that? Maybe you could host the whole thing in New Year's Day in Times Square.
Yeah, well, maybe, yeah, that's a good idea. Why don't you talk to my agent? You know, the agent I don't have?
Why are you getting all mad, man?
Because I put in a lot of time in this business, and look what's gotten me.
Well, you look good.
Really?
Yeah.
You coming on to me?
No. God, man, I'm just like, I want you to have a good day, you know?
There's a lot to look forward to. Quit while you're ahead, man.
There's a lot to look forward to, man. You got what do you got? Anything?
It's happy Kwanzaa.
There you go. Score one for the community.
Well, thanks, buddy. Have a great day.
Whatever.
For the next hour.
I don't know. My sides are
too
right.
We got David Habecker about the oil field thing in Colorado outside Denver. They're trying to push him out.
Yeah.
We got Peter Biskin to talk about movies. And we got the bomb pilot, the dehypnotizer.
Yeah.
All that and more on the next hour of Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
I'm Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes. Whoa, kitty cat, cat lovers, dog lovers, fish people, socialists, anarchists, and want to laugh. Good morning to you. Let it out. Let it out. All of yous. Good morning to you, Mark Riley.
Good morning to you. And can I say a special good morning?
Again?
Yeah.
Of course.
Bill O'Reilly.
Come on.
Special good morning.
Why? Because he talked about us?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Because he's a schmuck.
Okay.
But, you know,
you just feel like talking to Bill O'Reilly?
No. I just feel like giving him a special good morning and calling him a schmuck.
All right.
Now we can move on.
All right. That's fine. I am going to be on Conan O'Brien tonight. They called me yesterday. And it's weird, you know, Riley, because, like, I freak out because I got to figure out what the hell I'm going to say.
Yeah.
What am I going to talk about?
You've got plenty to talk. What do you mean, what are you going to talk about?
You don't understand. I've done this show 30 times.
Okay.
I mean, a lot of people don't realize that.
So you run out of stuff on time number 31?
No, of course, but you want to have a good conversation. I'm starting to think maybe I'm going to talk about my cats a little bit.
Talk about whatever drives the deepest, most seething anger in your soul.
That's a great idea for national television.
That's
a good idea. I'll just get on, and I wouldn't even prepare before. I'll just go, you know what, man? You know what, I hate Conan.
Hey, it works for a lot of people here in America.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, people love the anger. They love it. It makes them feel better.
Hey, man, Minister Louis Farrakhan can talk for 3 hours with no script.
But is that what we're about? Let's ask Reverend Forbes what liberals should be about, shall we?
Yeah. We better go into our values, and I don't mean two values.
Mm-hmm.
I mean the broad values upon which this nation was built. And that includes care for those who can't care for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It means productivity based on regulations that are fair for all of the people. It is based on a global vision that we are the global leaders. What is our vision for the globe, and how do we manifest that in our own nation? And we're going to be discussing how do religious values stop destroying folks and actually build up community and get us ready for the mission that is ahead.
See, that's what we've been... I don't hear any hate there. Do you hear any hate there?
No hate there.
Do you hear any repressive morality, like what's going on outside of Denver with our guests that we're going to talk to on the phone? A recall election is now set for an Estes Park, Colorado trustee who refuses to stand up and recite the Pledge of Allegiance during the town board meetings. This was a ritual that was instituted, shortly after the war, as an act of respect to our soldiers. So this guy decided that, you know, he never stood for the pledge before that, so he wasn't going to stand for it after because of the under God thing, as a protest against the mixture of church and state. And they are making it seem like this is a loyalty oath. They're questioning his integrity as an American, as a patriot, as somebody who is loyal to the country, and they're trying to bully him out of office.
Yeah, there's going to be an election, a recall election on February 15th, I believe it is, and he'll be out of the gig. And this is part and parcel of the right wing's attempt to control these kinds of things on a local level, and while at the same time starting at the top and working their way down.
This is the neocon, death cult, Christo-fascist zombie brigade propagandizing and taking action in local governments to impose their morality on the rest of us. And don't misunderstand me, good Christian people. I am not attacking Christians. This is a particular type of fanatical whack job who is dead set on making this country all of one ilk, which is not what a democratic America is supposed to be. Loyalty oaths in America, this is when they have actually taken place. During the Japanese internment, people were classified as pro-American or pro-Japanese and badgered into signing or rejecting loyalty oaths. During the McCarthy era, the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives overrode Truman's veto on the Taft-Hartley Act, which severely restricted the activities of labor unions. Labor unions had to sign a loyalty-slash-disclaimer oath that they weren't a member of the Communist Party. Of course, during the McCarthy era, there were loyalty oaths. In Nazi Germany, and I'd just like to read this before we get our guest on the phone. Article 6, Clause 3 of the U.S. Constitution, for one, says, quote, no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States, end quote. What do you think of that?
Hey, this is where people are trying to take all of us.
My computer just went off. Is David on the phone?
Yes, he is.
Okay, very good. Our guest right now from Estes Park, Colorado, is Town Trustee David Habecker. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So when you decided not to stand for the... Hold on a minute. I got it, Chris. When you decided not to stand up for the Pledge of Allegiance, is this something you've done most of your life, or...?
Yeah, standing for the pledge, I mean, I've done it ever since, as a child in school. And, of course, I'm old enough to remember when the pledge was changed and when the under God was added.
Right. So now, so all these people that you work with, now when you sit down for the pledge and they instituted this ritual, this oath of allegiance, when you started sitting down, did you feel right away that they were judging you and that they were planning your demise?
No.
You didn't?
No. It was... Of course, we only started saying the pledge just this last spring at mm-hmm. the urging of one of our other trustees. And the first time I sat, and it was kind of a last-minute thing. I mean, I hadn't really planned on doing it. It's just that after studying the Constitution and reading the article that you just read and a few other bits of history, that my legs just wouldn't get me up out of that chair.
Well, now, do you feel that these people, and how do you, what I'm trying to get at is that they see this as some sort of, you know, indication that you're being un-American, right?
Well, they're trying to say that I did not show the proper respect.
Yeah.
And I think that by obeying the Constitution, I am showing absolutely the proper respect.
Now, who are these people exactly? Are they part of a lobbying group? Are they part of some sort of alliance?
I don't think they're a part of any particular organization.
Mm-hmm.
There's people of different backgrounds that are against me. Some are there's some World War II veterans. There's some Vietnam veterans. There's church people. There's all sorts of folks that I seem to have irritated.
It's terrific.
Was the effort on the Estes Park Town Council a bipartisan one, or was it led by one party or the other?
We are we don't run on parties.
Not at all.
No. In fact, if somebody was to ask which one of us were Democrats or Republicans, you probably wouldn't get an accurate answer.
And how's the community responding?
I think the majority of the community is responding favorably, in my favor, that is. They seem to be tolerant of my of my actions and of my issues.
And how many signatures did your opponents need to hold a recall referendum? How many did they get?
They needed 214. They got 218.
And how did they present it to people? Did they slander you or make you look, suspect?
Not really. The only slander that I've seen is that some people are saying that I have turned my back to the flag, which is not literally correct, and it's certainly it's just not correct in any sense of the word. That gets irritating. I have not turned my back to the flag. I am trying to support the flag, support the Constitution, and support this country.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you challenge the petitions that were brought against you?
No.
You didn't? Why not?
Well, they were done legally and under state statute. There was no problem with the form. I have argued, and I have put letters in the paper arguing my point. That I have not disrespected the flag, but people have their opinions, and they're perfectly in their rights to do this.
Mm-hmm. So what are you going to do? Are you going to do anything to fight back?
I write letters. I talk to people. That's about the best I can do as far as fighting the recall. As far as fighting the words under God and the pledge, and if you want to go a little further than that, in God we trust on our paper money, there may be other courses of action that we can take there.
Well, I've got an idea about that myself, and maybe you can do it this way, David. I suggest that they add another line to the pledge where it's, under God or not, with liberty and justice for some. And the other thing I thought was, I think that under God, in God we trust on the money, wasn't that originally put there as a disclaimer?
In God we trust, all others pay cash.
Yeah, right. Hey, I want to thank you for being with us this morning.
Sure.
Appreciate
it's great
it, David.
Talking to you, and let us know what happens out there.
You bet.
Okay, buddy.
Appreciate it.
So 866-303-2270 is our number. If you've had any similar experiences of being bullied by this, sort of oppressive morality in this country, people who don't respect the separation of church and state, we'd certainly like to hear your story here. 866-303-2270, or, anything else that's on your mind in pertaining to our show or to the world or to you, we like you. 16 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Join the Morning Sedition. Call 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour. Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
866-303-2270. We're talking about people who have been bullied or coerced or harangued by people who want to impose their morality on them. That's what we're going to talk about. Do I do the palm pilot now? It's now, isn't it?
Yeah.
This came to us from Ramon dressed in a fireman's outfit. Yeah, mm-hmm. Very interesting. I thought he was part of the Village People, but apparently there was no fireman.
There's uniform services.
Yeah. Anyways, this is again Bernie Kerik's Palm Pilot. We're on a riff with Kerik. Here we go. 6 a.m. Wake up. Check on for reporters. Note, where'd everybody go? I'm Bernie frickin' Kerik. Oh! Oh! Oh, anybody? Oh. 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Sit around in undershirt. In a couple of weeks, this is good to get old. 12:30 p.m. Work on memoir. Change phrasing from the Battery Park City apartment donated for weary police and rescue workers at Ground Zero to the joint where me and Judith Regan used to do it. Oh! Oh! 1:30 p.m. Taser myself. Sorry, I had to let you cough.
That's sorry.
Good. Yeah, you're right on top of it. 30-year radio veteran. Cough button, buddy.
Too far to reach.
Taser myself. Okay, that hurts. Good to know. 4 p.m. Drive to mall. Detain random shoppers for questioning. Make dozens of citizens arrest. Declare myself chief of mall land security. 6 p.m. Go visit gym bags full of cash inside train station locker. Keep eye out for hot commuter and or homeless babes. Oh. 8 p.m. Post profile on Match.com. Seeking woman between 25 and 45. Must be a bad girl into bad cops. Contact me at BernieFrickinCarrick.com. Oh. Oh. Here's a letter from a concerned liberal Christian. This one's beautiful because it really indicates the hypocrisy of the whole thing. Although I am a liberal and was so happy to finally have a radio station for me, I am greatly disappointed in you and in Air America. There are liberals who love God and find your attacks on Christianity very offensive. A good way for your programs to be canceled.
Canceled by God?
But dig that. You know what I mean? It's like, first of all, we're not attacking Christianity. We're attacking a specific type of Christianity. If she's of the other ilk, you think she wouldn't be for censorship. A good way for your program to get canceled. Mark in New Jersey, what's going on, buddy? How you feeling?
What's up, Mark? Hello.
Hey, Mark.
How you doing?
What's up?
Nothing.
How you guys doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to give you a call. I have a similar situation at work. A gentleman, a Republican, and a moralist Christian, I guess you could call him.
Moralizing.
And,
yeah.
And we have a constant argument at work pertaining to the Iraqi war. And, you know, and anytime I kind of bring up the argument that, hey, you know, I think that I don't really believe in Jesus, but I think that people have a right to live, particularly the innocents in Iraq.
Yeah.
His retort is, well, you're just a communist, and, you know, it's love it or leave it. And I'm just kind of calling to all rational Christians that I don't ever see it written that thou shalt kill Iraqis.
Good point.
And I'm just, I just generally concerned that, you know, that people who are Christians shouldn't just necessarily blindly fall behind the GOP's version of this. You know, I love the neocon death cult thing. I mean, I think that's pretty appropriate.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and I appreciate your call. That's the thing. And tell your coworker to update his retort. Communist? What is this? 1969?
Yeah. What does that got to do with Iraq?
1957. What an idiot. I mean, yeah, the truth of the matter is there's 100,000 plus people killed in Iraq by us, and I'm assuming hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and thousands of civilians killed. And, you know, if a Christian's only retort, this is somebody who claims to be a moral person and a devout Christian, would dismiss that, then, you know, they really aren't following Christian principles in any way, are they, Riley?
Well, look, this is something that's been going on, again, for a long time. The Christians, not slavery, was instituted, transatlantic slavery, certainly, by Christians.
Yeah. Let's talk to Dave. He's streaming in Texas. There you go, Dave. I know there's hundreds of you guys out there.
Hey!
There's more than hundreds of
thousands.
Them. I hope so.
Well, it's weird. I made a joke the other day about people streaming in Texas from, you know, basements because they didn't want to get caught streaming. And a guy wrote me an email and said, there are thousands of us. So I'm going to say you're one of the thousands.
Think about how low our stack hangs.
Okay.
I mean,
do I have to? For how long do I have to think about that?
Not too long.
Okay.
Not too long.
What's on your mind, man?
Well, I had this thing happen the other day with a Republican.
Yeah.
And, I train this jiu-jitsu stuff where we strangle each other and do arm locks and stuff.
Uh-huh. You're a trainer?
No, I'm a student.
Okay. He's a strangler.
Okay.
I like strangling. That's actually
the thing. Yeah, I knew it.
Okay. Let's not talk about your sex life. Let's try this.
No. Well, anyway. So, okay. Anyway, we're having this discussion, and I just told him that we trained like Democrats at our academy.
Uh-huh.
Because we took care of each other, we made sure not to, you know, hurt each other.
Uh-huh.
You know, we were all trying to get ice.
Okay, we're going to dump it and try and get back to it. Okay, so you said, well, bleep, man.
Yeah, sorry. Well, you know,
okay, got it.
Let's go ahead and train like Republicans.
Okay.
So we trained like Republicans, and I ended up strangling him unconscious.
Oh, my God.
You need a spot in the liberal confessional there.
Yeah.
You're
That's
a couple of days late, Dave.
This is the liberal confessional about bullying and coercion, right?
Yeah. Not quite. We were trying to get people who were being bullied by people who were claiming to be Christians, but we'll take your confession.
We'll take it. And what kind of penance do we give him, Mark?
I don't know. You're going to have to buy the guy a milkshake.
Yeah. Or watch the first Godfather movie a few times, especially the Luca Brasi scene.
All right, thanks for your calls. We're going to come back with, come on, Mark.
We got Peter Biskin.
Peter Biskin to talk about movies. I love this first book. I'm looking forward to talking to him.
That's
it's
right.
Air America Radio. Come back.
Morning
Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour. I am Mark Maron. That is Mark Riley.
Good morning.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Soon we will be talking to Peter Viskind, who is the author of Easy Riders and Raging Bulls, also the author of a new book, Down in Dirty Pictures, Miramax, Sundance, and the Rise of Independent Film. He'll be with us momentarily. But first, since I firmly believe that large sections of this country have been hypnotized by the right-wing propaganda machine, and since I believe no voter is beyond our grasp, I would like to perform a healing dehypnosis on you now. I am an adept of Bulgarian mesmerists who entrusted me with this secret wisdom that was transcribed from a cryptic text etched on the back of a lapis scarab that was planted deep inside the rectum of King Imhotep III. So if you dare, place your fate in the hands of me, Mark the Not All That Mysterious. Now close your eyes, except for the third one. Open your mind to the dehypnotizer. Relax. Breathe deeply and concentrate on the sound of my voice. Now remove your pants. Good. Very good. Now I want you to think of the word privatization. If you understand, point to your temple and make a circular motion with your forefinger. Good. Now the right-wing spin machine would have you believe that privatization means taking social programs out of the hands of incompetent government agencies and placing it into the hands of wise and benevolent private companies. In the case of Social Security, this is a lie. Instead, it is taking money that is secured for you and throwing it into a dark cash tar pit designed by Republicans to enable Wall Street a-holes to grab large commissions for throwing your hard-earned retirement money at anything they hope will score them a quick buck. If you believe this will actually help you in your golden years, grab your ankles and then reach around and slap yourself on both cheeks. Hard. Does it sting? Good. Would you want your retirement fund invested in something like Betamax or Planet Hollywood or Enron, which seemed like a great stock initially until a bunch of Bush cronies heartlessly screwed thousands of loyal employees out of their 401ks, along with thousands of other investors? But I digress. So don't think of it as privatization. Think of it as stealing, or more specifically, stealing from old people. Or as allowing the government to take stats of your future and slide it across the table and put half on red and the rest on 17 or 12 or 28 or whatever date your dog's birthday happens to fall on. Okay, that one's a little long. Let's just stick with stealing. If you understand, rise from your chair and twirl like a pretty ballerina. Oh, good. I will now count to three and you will wake refreshed, alert, and receptive to the rest of the show, which is the funniest program in the history of radio. Now put your pants back on and return to your lives. One, two, three.
Good morning, Mark.
How are you? I'm just trying to try to provide a service. I'm very excited to talk to our guest who is in studio. As I said before, he's the author of Easy Riders and Raging Bulls. He's the author of Down and Dirty Pictures, his new book, and a collection of essays, Gods and Monsters. Please welcome Peter Viskind to the show. Good morning, sir.
Thank you, Mark.
Good morning.
You know, I liked your first book, as in you came in and said, what about the other ones? Haven't read them yet. I'm going to get to them.
Yeah, yeah.
But I noticed in the collection of essays, which is Gods and Monsters, that you focus a lot on politics and cinema. Now, what is the evolution like? You know, I watched Chinatown last night, you know, again, for the upteenth time, which I'm sure you have as well. And on some level, that can be seen as a political movie, could it not?
Yeah, I mean, I actually am of the opinion that all movies, you know, are political in some sense. It just depends on, really, on what your definition of political is. In other words, all movies carry political values in one way or another. It's inevitable. I mean, they're part of the culture, and they partake of that culture, and that culture is permeated with political values, especially now when, you know, the culture wars are so, you know, fierce.
So what kind of political values? You know, let's do a brief history. Like, coming up through the 30s, you know, there were sort of jingoistic films made by great directors, oddly, right?
Yeah, I mean, in any given era, there's all kinds of films. I mean, it's hard to generalize to say a certain era mm-hmm. has this kind of politics in its films, because there are, in my view, films, there are sort of liberal films and conservative films and even radical films in any given era, and they all sort of contest with each other and they debate each other. So in the 50s, for example, which was a period which is, you know, generally regarded as conservative, there were plenty of liberal films like High Noon, you know, which was generally conceded as to be an Andy McCarthy film. or Invasion of the Body Snatchers, another film that was is considered to be an Andy McCarthy film. There are all kinds of, there's a spectrum of political views, I think, in any given era.
Let's see, High Noon. I didn't realize
Do
that.
Do not forsake me, oh my darling.
Yeah,
I remember that.
What is it about it thematically that makes it an anti-McCarthy film?
Well, it's the story, of course, is the marshal, who's the lone moral figure in the town,
mm-hmm.
and when these three guys, I think it's three, the Miller gang,
they come down
the Miller brothers
right.
get out of jail and come to kill him. He goes to everybody in town and says,
I need your help.
I need your help. And everybody says, take a hike.
Even Lon Chaney Jr.
So it's the sense is that the community collapses and that no one will take a stand. Everybody's afraid.
And
the context was, it was produced by a blacklisted producer, Carl Foreman.
Okay.
And that was written by, actually directed by... I guess Stanley Kramer directed it. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
it was produced and directed by people who were involved in the Black
Lives. Well, that's interesting. I never knew that. That's why I love talking to guys who know so much about film. Now, what about today? Let's talk about some of the political movies today. And maybe some of the, first off, why don't we talk about some of your favorite political movies?
Well, there aren't as many overtly political movies that are coming out of the studios as there might be, obviously, because there's a real kind of fatwa. Conventional against political movies. The conventional wisdom is that was expressed by one of the moguls. I forget if it was Sam Goldwyn or Harry Dean Mayer said something like, "You have a message called Western Union." There's always been a sense that politics and film don't mix. But of course, there have been great political movies like Dr. Strangelove, for example, or,
sure.
or Reds, or Bulworth. I mean, Warren Beatty's made a bunch of them.
Shampoo.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course. Battle of Algiers, one of the great political movies.
Just reissued.
Mm-hmm. MASH.
Funny, I saw a movie the other day that I didn't think for a long time was political, but when I watch it now, it does seem that way, and maybe it's because of the guy who was a star. But Touch of Evil struck me as being, a political movie.
Why so, Mark Riley?
Well, it was the whole idea of, a Mexican town. First of all, the idea that all of the Mexican characters, virtually all of them are white people, just struck me right off the top as being a political statement in and of itself.
And the Texan
sheriff. Marlena Dietrich played a Mexican woman in that movie, for God's sake. You know what I'm saying? To me, that's political.
I remember really specifically the guy with the big eyes getting strangled.
Yeah. Orson Welles, who directed the film.
A corrupt sheriff.
I mean, just like a really sleazy character. Janet Leigh played Charlton Heston's wife. He was a prosecutor, I think, prosecutor.
I remember this movie.
Yeah.
It was about an old murder case.
It was about an old murder case. It was about, getting the woman drugged up, I think, on marijuana.
Movie.
It was a very, very strange, but for me, that was a political
Well, movie. Also because, as the case is solved, it involves the power structure.
That's what it is, power structure. Same with Chinatown. It's about the power structure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, one way of approaching this is talking about what do you look for in terms of trying to figure out the politics of the film, and one of the things you look for is who's good and who's bad, and where are they? Are they at the top or are they at the bottom? Like a film like Jaws, again, it's the power structure of the town that wants to cover up, the shark catastrophe.
So they don't lose money
on tourism. Yeah. So I mean, that's like a.
And of course, the shark is Republican policy.
Well, it's a Watergate era film.
Yeah.
It was made right in the middle of Watergate, and it's essentially the same theme.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was just thinking about like your first book in Raging Bulls and Easy Riders was that at the time that all these young directors like Raffleson and Warren Beatty and Hal Ashby, that what happened with that was that the studio system sort of hit the wall in terms of knowing how to market films to the new generation of people, so there was a window for these guys to start making films, and obviously those films were politically charged because the people they were trying to market to, the studios wanted, were politically charged people. The culture was in an upheaval.
Yeah, that's basically true. I mean, at the end of the 60s, the studios were run by the generation that started the movies. Jack Warner was still running Warner Brothers. Adolf Zucker was still at Fox or Paramount. These guys, 93-year-old guys, are completely out of touch with the counterculture audience that was running wild in the streets, burning draft cards. And all the films they were making was big budget musicals and westerns.
Did badly.
They did terribly.
Yeah.
And then, of course, along came Bonnie and Clyde in 1967, The Graduate in 1967, Midnight Cowboy and Easy Rider in 1969, and that just turned the whole system upside down. Suddenly they realized that these kids knew how to, these young directors under 30 knew how to reach this youth audience.
Right. But, you know, ironically enough, weren't some of those same filmmakers nurtured by, of all people, Roger Corman?
A lot of them were nurtured by Roger Corman, and Roger Corman had a definite political slant. I mean, he was always, all his films were, to some degree or another, anti-authoritarian.
Mm-hmm.
But he did, in fact, yeah, you're right. I mean, it was a kind of a hands-on training school.
Yeah.
Scorsese worked for Corman, Coppola worked for Corman, Peter Bogdanovich, Peter Fonda, they all worked for Corman.
Everybody, Jack Nicholson as well. We're talking to Peter Biskin. We'll talk a little bit about your new book in terms of the new independent cinema after this, and maybe a little bit about your Oscar picks and what you felt were the best films and most political films this year when we come back. It's 45 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley, because two Marks are better than one. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. You're
yes.
Listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. We're talking to Peter Biskin. His books, Gods and Monsters, or Down and Dirty Pictures, the Miramax Sundance and the Rise of Independent Film, or Easy Riders and Raging Bulls, which came out a couple years back, are all available at morningsedition.com for a little bit of a discount. Your newest book, Down and Dirty Pictures, about Miramax and Sundance and the Rise of Independent Film, that just came out, correct?
Oh, it's out about a year. The paperback's about to come out.
Oh, right. Okay. It's out.
January.
Oh, it's out, I think. No?
It may be out. Yeah,
I just saw it at Virgin Superstore yesterday.
Yeah, they often jump the gun. That just came out.
So let's talk about, obviously, the political movie of the year, Fahrenheit 9/11, and also the other political movie of the year, Team America. Now, what did you think of the film Fahrenheit 9/11?
I liked it a lot. I mean, I thought, for me, it was like a breath of fresh air. I'm a big, I'm a Michael Moore fan, mm-hmm. generally. I mean, I've liked his other movies. And, you know, what I liked about it, among other things, was one of the things that a lot of people who didn't like about it, mm-hmm. was it's got such a strong point of view. People always say, he should stay out of his own movie.
Or that documentaries, as journalistic artifacts, should not have that much bias.
Yes, they should be, quote-unquote, objective.
Right.
Well, my feeling is, and it's not a particularly original thought, is there's really no such thing as objectivity
in any
piece of art, either a documentary or a fiction film.
Someone is holding the camera.
Right, exactly. And somebody's editing the film after it's been shot. So, the pretense of objectivity in documentaries, which has been the conventional wisdom for years, really is totally untrue. And what I liked about Michael Moore's films is the point of view is very obvious. He's not making a secret about it, whereas a lot of documentaries, the point of view is concealed. So I think there's a kind of honesty to the film that that I appreciated. Plus, the energy and just the wit and the comic sense. And the sense, he's got a real killer instinct. And all those things, I think, combined made a fabulous film.
Now, also, okay, so Team America, we went to see because they were supposed to come on our show, and they ditched us because they heard it was a network. I didn't enjoy the movie, and certainly the politics of it were questionable. What did you feel about it?
Well, I actually liked the movie, and which is always kind of an interesting situation where you like a movie where you find the politics totally objectionable. I mean, I couldn't stand the politics. Just similarly, I was a little uncomfortable with the politics of The Incredibles.
I didn't see The Incredibles yet.
Yeah, the Pixar film, which is
why?
Another.
What in particular?
Well, the whole conceit of the movie is that these superheroes have been drummed out of the business by sort of mediocrity, by lawsuits, and they're sort of in the witness protection program somewhere in the Midwest, and they're not practicing. They're not utilizing their superhero skills because they've been victims of political correctness, in some sense. It's a pro-tort reform movie.
I get it.
Probably the only one ever made, right?
Because every time they save, a bunch of passengers on a bus, somebody gets whiplash and sues them, so
right.
They finally can't afford to be superheroes anymore, so they're just going to give it up. And the whole story is how they regain, you know, their abilities and their right to, you know, to use their superpowers. I mean, that scene is actually appears in Spider-Man 2 for a bit, you know.
Which you liked as well.
Which I liked as well. So it's always interesting when your sort of aesthetic sense pulls you again. I mean, I thought Team America was just very funny, and I guess it's kind of a guilty pleasure because there's a scene in it where this puppet vomits for 15 minutes, which somebody told me about it, I would wince, but I found it hysterically funny.
Those were the funny parts.
Laughing.
Yeah. Or when that guy kept making the sign.
Yeah.
Okay, help me out. Yeah.
But I mean, you know, in Team America, you know, the villains are Hollywood liberals. You know, Tim Robbins,
sure,
and Alec Baldwin's of the world.
Our very own Jean Ingram Garofalo.
Yeah,
exactly.
Gets the worst of it. She actually gets her head blown off, doesn't she?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
So, I found that reprehensible, but I still like the movie.
Yeah.
I thought it was very funny.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things like that, as wrong as they are. I mean, I love the movie Jackass. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I don't even know why, because it's not even a real movie, per se.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something about it, and I've watched it two or three times when it's on cable, and I still get the big laughs.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a unpleasant, but unfortunately true thing that the right has a sense of humor too.
Well, they have, because of their narrow mindedness, they are less ashamed in certain ways to do certain things that are in, I think, slapstick, you know, that where they're not worried about hurting people.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's a little bit, you know, Howard Stern has kind of moved to the left, but before he did that, you know, there's a lot of humor in baiting political correctness, you know, and being a bad boy, you know.
Right, but isn't the idea of First Amendment, you know, pushing, you know, First Amendment rights is an issue of the left? I think Stern, on some level, outside of what he used to say, you know, being post the war, was always a little of the left just by nature, wasn't he?
Well, I think that's true. I mean, that the same syndrome occurred with, you know, all the sort of the Playboy and Hugh Hefner and,
mm-hmm,
and Larry Flynt all became kind of leftist by dint of, you know, running up against
Al Goldstein,
the First Amendment war.
Now sells cigars at J&R Cigars. So we only got a couple minutes. How about some of this year's movies? You have any Oscar picks?
Well, you know, I haven't seen a couple of them. I like Kinsey a lot. I thought Kinsey was a fabulous movie.
Oh, great, great.
Really interesting, very ambitious, and very interesting politically.
Mm-hmm.
Sideways, you know, I liked as well. I didn't like it as much as, some of the other critics liked it. I think it was a little bit overpriced, but it's not a bad movie.
You think they're going to, I think those guys, Taylor and Julian, what's his last
Jim
name?
Taylor
Jim
and,
Taylor.
And Alexander Payne.
Alexander Payne. I think they're going to give them the best screenplay this year, don't you?
I think it's probably likely, yeah.
I mean, it's their due. You know, they've been nominated twice,
yeah,
and that's their way in. I think that's going to happen. Did you see Aviator?
I haven't seen Aviator yet, and undoubtedly that's going to get nominated. And, so far the buzz has been pretty good on it, so maybe this is going to be Scorsese's year to finally win an Oscar.
You would think. I got to go see it. Our writer, the Colonel Kent Jones, he thought it was tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to seeing it. Thank you, Peter Biskin, for being with us. It's great talking to you. The book,
yeah,
the new book, the many books, Gods and Monsters, Down and Dirty Pictures, the other book, Easy Riders and Raging Bull, the first book, all very good reads. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
So right there's the sound of the fax machine. It's time for the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Write these down. Here are your marching orders for today. 1, support reindeer legislation that will finally make it legal for Dancer and Prancer to get married. 2, calculate number of edgy independent films that could have been produced with the $85 million the military spent on the failed missile defense system test. 3, with scissors, turn worthless U.S. dollars into colorful holiday snowflake decorations. 4, give your significant other a rare and valuable holiday gift, a flu shot. And 5, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. You know that Santa at the mall? Homeland Security, buddy. He's gathering intelligence on you, man. In a couple of weeks, he'll be coming down your chimney, man. Wake up, people. How clear does it have to be? That's it.
Fast day today, man.
It was a good
show.
It
was a quick day. Yeah,
now, packed.
Yeah, tomorrow.
Yeah.
We're going to have Marine Staff Sergeant Jimmy Massey. You remember him? We talked to him before.
That's a heavy cat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He talks about his experiences inside Iraq and talks about how soldiers sometimes killed innocent Iraqis.
Yeah.
Deep. Too deep for me.
Yeah.
But it was enjoyable this morning, man.
Oh, you too, man. I liked it. See you tomorrow, right?
See you tomorrow. Air America Radio.